This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Thursday, February 28, 2013. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel is reporting that at least two Delta Police Department employees were put on administrative leave after an altercation early yesterday morning in the parking lot of the Delta Walmart. Officers responded on a report of a suspicious vehicle parked in the lot and occupied by two people at about 12:50 a.m. A physical altercation took place, resulting in one person being hospitalized. As of yesterday, police refused to release any other details, including how many police department employees were placed on leave or the nature and chronology of the altercation. According to the Sentinel, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation is assisting in the case. The state of Colorado is one step closer to removing the crime of adultery from the books. A measure to decriminalize the act of adultery passed the House yesterday largely along party lines and now heads to the Senate. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Republicans argued against House Bill 1166. Representative Brian Del Grosso of Loveland says the law still serves a purpose.
And I do agree the government doesn't need to be involved in people's bedrooms, and that is Section 1 of the bill. But Section 2 of the bill is dealing with something totally different.
Del Grosso says he doesn't want to remove the crime of promoting sexual immorality. Republican Representative Polly Lawrence from Douglas County agrees and says the immorality provision is important for combating human trafficking.
Think about that human trafficking resolution that we passed and whether it's really appropriate that we now remove that tool that law enforcement has in their toolbox to prosecute people who are abusing young women across this country, who are using this to pimp them out.
But Democratic Representative Beth McCann of Denver says the law was on the books before Colorado even became a state and is outdated.
Law enforcement officers that are prosecuting these cases here in Colorado, they don't use the statute. I don't think we lose anything by getting rid of it.
We don't want to do anything that impedes our ability to police prostitution and trafficking.
That's Democratic Representative Daniel Kagan of Cherry Hills Village. He's sponsoring the bill and says the measure will protect people's privacy.
The promoting sexual immorality is simply renting a room to an unmarried couple. The pimping statute is there. The pandering statute is there. This bill will not affect that.
Kagan and other supporters say the goal is to get rid of unnecessary and antiquated laws. He says adultery should be an issue between spouses and a person's own conscience, not a crime. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Adultery was also a controversial issue back in 1971 when the legislature passed Senate Bill 262, the all-encompassing criminal code that substituted a new set of statutes to replace every law passed between 1877 and 1970. KVNF's Marty Durlin has more.
One of the first laws passed while Colorado was still a territory back in 1861 was the statute against adultery. It included language such as, quote, "This offense shall be sufficiently proved by circumstances which raise the presumption of cohabitation and unlawful intimacy," unquote. The penalties increased for each subsequent offense and topped out at 6 months in jail and $200 in fines. The 1971 change in the statute was written by then-District Attorney Dale Tooley, who drafted one sentence, the current statute. Quote, "Any sexual intercourse by a married person other than with that person's spouse is adultery, which is prohibited," unquote. The language eliminated fornication as an offense, and it did not mention a penalty for adultery, and it did not classify the act as a felony, misdemeanor, or petty offense. During the debate in House Judiciary Committee on Senate Bill 262, Representative Jerry Koppel asked a witness, former Colorado Supreme Court Chief Justice O. Otto Moore, who was then serving as an assistant to D.A. Tooley, the following. "Justice Moore, can you tell our committee the difference between adultery and fornication?" Justice Moore replied after a short pause, Well, I have tried both, and I was unable to tell any difference. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
Recent snowstorms have eased drought concerns in western Colorado, but more moisture is needed to make up for last year's water shortages. Some scientists are looking into whether the drought of 2012 was made worse because of climate change, but many Americans still don't believe it's a problem. So, what happens when a family of ranchers and coal miners sit down for breakfast with a climate scientist from NASA to talk about global warming and drought? For IC Change and KVNF, Julia Kamari-Drapkin found out.
When Pat Polson dishes out pancakes and bacon, chances are she's fueling the family for a big day. The 76-year-old matriarch with grandma glasses can command an army with a spatula dripping with bacon grease.
Okay, get those on there and get to the table and somebody can ask the blessing.
Cooking big breakfasts goes back to Pat's great-grandmother. To support her children, she cooked for miners. Nearly 100 years later, that kind of grit is still in the Polson family DNA. Three of Pat's four sons work in the local coal mines. In between shifts, they come home to pitch in with the family cattle herds. This morning marks the move from the summer pasture a few miles down the road back to Pat's ranch for the winter. Although her sons back up the rear on four-wheelers, it's Pat that's driving the cows home, literally. With one hand out the window holding an orange flag and the other steering the family minivan, her pet corgi cattle dog by her side, the 80 head of cattle know who to follow.
Man, they sure were in a hurry to come home today.
It's not often that you look behind you in the rearview mirror and see a herd of cows.
As Pat turns past the empty town reservoir, she winces. The drought of 2012 devastated the Polson's hay crop this year. With their irrigation water out in June, Pat and her sons are forced to make some tough decisions. To keep the herd fed over the winter means culling it way down. Still, drought is nothing new to Pat Polson.
The first several years we were married were dry years.
Pat and her husband, Dwayne, who passed away last year, were married in 1954.
Mm-hmm. And then we had a dry year in the 70s and another in the 80s and another in the 90s. So they come pretty frequently, really.
But even in the midst of Pat's grin and Barrett grit, something seems odd about the drought of 2012.
We've never had the wind like we've had it this year. A dry, warm wind. And it just took what moisture there was. It was really sad.
In her whole life, she's never seen a wind like that. But Pat, like many people who've ridden through countless good and bad weather cycles, doesn't believe that people can change the climate.
You know, we're not going to be able to control Mother Nature. Maybe we'd like to.
Still, she can't help but wonder about this particular drought.
Yeah. What's causing the wind like we've had it?
It's the same underlying processes that, you know, she's observing and that I'm observing on my computer, you know, thousands of miles away in New York City.
Ben Cook models climate change and drought for the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Ben says Pat's right. The record heat and dry winds, not the lack of water, made the drought of 2012 one of the worst ever, rivaling even the Dust Bowl. Now here are two people from wholly opposite perspectives seeing the same thing. One doesn't believe in human-caused climate change. The other studies it. But they're both really reasonable, smart people. And so I asked Pat if it was okay to invite Ben over to her ranch for breakfast.
Is there anything you need? Or want?
No, this is great. Okay. Thanks so much for hosting us. Actually, I have a Tabasco.
Ben, who's half Pat's age, could easily pass as a grandson at the table.
Did you want some toast?
Oh, no, thank you.
No?
He studied every drought that Pat Polson has lived through, plus the one that she didn't. The Dust Bowl. a drought made worse by people in the 30s ripping out the prairies. By the way, it's not just Ben who came to breakfast. Pat's sons came as well.
Well, I guess we all kind of think that Al Gore's statement about global warming is a little off the wall. The weather changes. It goes up and down. We have dry spells, and we have wet spells, and we have cold spells, and we have warm spells. And you can look back through time and know that because we have the Ice Age. And we just have to live with it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, you're still sort of going up and down, relative to some sort of baseline, right? If you're also slowly moving in one direction, either drier or wetter, you know, that can have, you know, important consequences.
Right.
One of the things that made 2012 so bad, you know, for the country, was that it was a really hot drought. You know, a lot of places broke their temperature records that were set back during the Dust Bowl in the 1930s.
Like the Dust Bowl, the drought of 2012 was outside of the normal drought patterns. It spread over vast swaths of the heartland and the southwest. That, combined with the record high temperatures, suggests to Ben that this drought was made worse because of global warming.
Based on my own experiences, you know, I believe that it is due to human, you know, greenhouse gases, you know, carbon dioxide.
Okay. Totally or somewhat?
Not totally, because again, you know, there's a lot of variability. But, I mean, probably 60 to 70% of the warming that we've seen over the last 50 years, we think is probably due to human activities. You know, primarily burning, you know, fossil fuels and putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
Now remember, three of Pat's sons work in the local coal mines, and so this doesn't, you know, sit well at the table. Roger, Pat's oldest son, bristles a bit.
It's not like I'm going to, you know, go quit my job because I think that, you know, fossil fuels are a big part of the global warming. For one thing, there's not a whole lot of other jobs in this area, and none of them basically pay as well.
Every single person at the table tells Ben they're concerned that cutting carbon emissions might devastate the economy. Keep my job. Ben notes at the same time the severity of the current drought has already been very costly, not just for Colorado, but for the rest of the country as well.
There's already an estimate that crop insurance payouts are going to be about $16 billion. And that also doesn't account for the fact that food is going to be more expensive.
Ben also explains the added costs of having less water on the Mississippi River for barge traffic, not to mention the cost of the record-setting wildfire season.
I still think that ranchers and farmers are the best stewards of the earth. I had heard, and I didn't study it, so I don't know, but I'd heard that the fertilizer that leaches and goes downstream kills fish. I said, you know what? We're not using it.
So I asked Pat what the difference was between thinking about the impacts of fertilizer on fish and the impacts of coal on climate change, especially if climate change affects future generations of people, not just fish.
Yes, maybe it needs to be phased out. But it's certainly for the economy and the good of all of America, it doesn't need to go bang, bang, bang and knock so many people out of jobs.
So in many ways, it's not whether the science is right about global warming. It's what the science means to families like the Polsons, who sit squarely at the intersection of climate and carbon.
I'd a whole lot rather be able to ranch and not have to work in a coal mine. And,
that's Pat's youngest son, Randy.
And be outside, yeah, that'd be great. But
every one of the kids would love to be just a rancher. Mm-hmm. Everyone.
Yeah, we are putting too much pollutants into the air, and we need to gradually phase it out. The rainforests are being cut down in every country, basically, it's going to come down to, has to try to do their part, or our days are numbered.
After 2 hours of talking, the coffee was out and the bacon all gone. Many great questions were asked. Some were answered, and some had nothing to do with climate. But had coming here to this table brought Ben and the Polsons any closer to understanding each other?
You know, I'm not a policy person. In my day-to-day job, I'm not you know, an advocate. You know, obviously I have my own sort of personal beliefs about a lot of these things. But as a scientist, I feel like my job is more to sort of, you know, provide the best information I can to people. And then ultimately it's up to people, mm-hmm. you know, including you all here and then people in Washington and whatever, to sort of decide what's sort of the best approach to dealing with some of these problems. If it looks like it's getting drier, regardless of why, that's information that could potentially be used to try to plan for a drier future.
No, I think he's got a very interesting study, and it's all great. But I'm still convinced that God's in control, and I think it goes in cycles. And I don't think man's going to control the wind.
No one has analyzed whether the wind really was stronger and drier this past year in this corner of Colorado. So all we have to go on is Pat's experience about the drought of 2012.
It was a hard year for me. It was the second year I'd lost Duane. And I found that the second year was harder than the first year. And with the drought and having to sell cows and everything, it hit me harder. And I don't like wind, and so that hit me harder.
There's a saying in science that in my experience is the opposite of data. In Ben's experience, he believes the extreme drought of 2012 is the result of carbon emissions in the atmosphere. But as a scientist, he says he has to wait 100 years to be 100% sure. In the meantime, I wonder, when do all these personal experiences add up to a bigger picture, bigger than data even? When will we look back at 2012 and say, okay, somewhere in the middle, we can all agree that there was something in the wind, something that has changed the weather, and that something has got to change. For I See Change, this is Julia Kumari-Drapkin.
Thank you, Julia. And if you would like to know more about I See Change and Julia's work here in Colorado over the last year, visit thealmanac.org, where you can be a part of the discussion. Please do. Be a part of Two-Way Radio here on the Western Slope. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.